in this week's market update. The significance of the fall of Kabul, focus on the Fed ahead of Jackson Hole, and buoyant earnings continue to support shares. Well, this is a market update, so the fall of Kabul may seem out of scope, but an event which rivals the fall of Saigon in the list of US defeats and humiliations can't be ignored by investors. So, what might it mean? Most importantly, it means the world feels unsafe again. The invasion of Afghanistan in 2001 was justified by the Taliban's harbouring of Al-Qaeda, and their return to power threatens to create another safe haven for anti-Western terrorists. Secondly, the retreat from the country undermines President Joe Biden's credibility. He didn't initiate talks with the Taliban or call time on America's 20 years in Afghanistan. Those happened on Donald Trump's watch. But he delivered the withdrawal, and what happens there now will colour the rest of his term in office. It may act as a brake on his more ambitious plans. Thirdly, America's inability to tame a small and militarily insignificant country underscores its waning power on the global stage. Both China and Russia will feel emboldened now to challenge the US. How this pans out remains unclear and may be surprising. Defeat in Vietnam was humiliating, but 14 years later, the Cold War ended and the US went on to enjoy a period as the world's only superpower. That will not be the case today, thanks to the emergence of China as a meaningful geopolitical rival, but it shows how dangerous forecasts can be in a world with many moving parts. Now, back to the more obviously market-related matters. The next 2 weeks will be important for Fed watchers. The US Central Bank will this week publish the minutes of its most recent rate-setting meeting, and next week, America hosts the annual Jackson Hole Summit. The minutes should give some insight into the conditions under which the Fed will begin to withdraw its support for the US economy. At the July 28th meeting, Chair Jay Powell said the Fed needed to see more evidence of a labour market recovery before it would slow the rate of bond purchases, let alone think about raising interest rates. However, since then, other Fed officials have struck a more hawkish tone. Vice Chair Richard Clarida, in particular, said that inflation and economic growth were moving towards the point at which a change in policy would be justified. The discussion on inflation is key because evidence has emerged showing that consumer prices were rising at a slower rate in July than June, supporting the Fed's line that price rises will run out of steam as the post-pandemic comparisons become less of a concern. Bond yields have fallen back to under 1.3%, suggesting fixed income investors are also more concerned about growth than inflation right now. The market is still only looking for a 1 percentage point rise in US rates over the next 5 years. For some time, however, Fed watchers have warned that next week's gathering of the world's central bankers at Jackson Hole in Wyoming would be the platform for an unveiling of the roadmap towards tighter policy. In a quiet holiday period, that has the potential to unsettle markets. Meanwhile, the economic data in America will be in focus following a slide in the University of Michigan's widely watched sentiment survey. The drop in the consumer sentiment measure from a July reading of 81.2 to a preliminary 70.2 in August was the lowest since December 2011 and one of the top seven drops in the history of the survey. The fall was blamed on consumers sensing that America is not yet out of the woods as far as COVID is concerned. Unlike in the UK, where rising infection rates have not translated into higher hospitalisations and deaths, the lower vaccination rate in the US is seeing an uptick in the number of beds occupied by COVID patients. Another damaging wave looks possible with further lockdowns and the hit to the economy that these would imply. In that context, this week's US retail sales figures will be closely watched, with flat consumption growth considered likely after a slowdown in credit card sales at the end of July. Also this week, a flurry of earnings figures from US retailers like Walmart, Target, Home Depot, Lowe's and TK Maxx owner TJX will shine a light on the health of the American consumer. Those numbers pretty much bring an end to a spectacular second quarter earnings season. With almost all the figures now in the bag, it's clear that results have been way better than expected just a few weeks ago. The comparison with the difficult second quarter of last year was always likely to be favourable, but it looks as if earnings have emerged around 90% higher than 12 months ago. This will almost certainly represent peak earnings growth, and the current growth forecasts for the third and fourth quarters stand at respectively 28% and 20%. However, those numbers are also higher than recently forecast, and so suggest an extension of the growth cycle for longer than feared. They go some way to justifying the recent strength of the stock market. In particular, the sharp rise in earnings has kept valuations in check, despite the stock market heading further into record territory, with the S&P 500 ending last week at 4,468. The ratio of share prices to earnings in the US fell as low as 13 in March 2020 and peaked at 23 a year ago, but it has drifted since then and currently stands at about 21. That's still above the long-term average, but it suggests that the stock market is not running away with itself. The recent gains are a reasonable reflection of improving fundamentals. And this is not just a US story. The Pan-European Stoxx 600 index also hit new records last week, closing with a 10th successive rise on Friday, its best run since at least 1990. Earnings growth has been 11 percentage points higher in Europe than forecast, and half of all companies have beaten expectations by at least 5%. European shares have kept pace with the US so far this year, as earnings have recovered their pre-pandemic highs within 18 months, compared with about 11 years after the financial crisis. The picture in Asia is less encouraging. In China, industrial production increased by 6.4% year on year in July. That compared with forecasts of 7.8% and followed an 8.3% rise in June. Retail sales increased by 8.5% in July, far lower than the 11.5% forecast and well down from June's 12.1% year on year increase. The Chinese economy has now recovered its pre-pandemic level, but the expansion is running out of steam on the back of higher input costs, supply bottlenecks, and a rise in COVID infections, leading to new restrictions. Investors worried about the sluggish nature of the Chinese recovery will be reading between the lines of this week's brace of big mining results. Both BHP Billiton and Antofagasta are key suppliers of raw materials to the Chinese economy. In Japan too, a 1.3% uptick in GDP in the second quarter partially reversed the 3.7% slide in the first 3 months, but the rebound was slower than in other advanced economies, and worries are rising about a post-Olympics upsurge in COVID cases weighing on household spending. This mixed picture may explain why sentiment has been slow to catch up the remarkable 102% rise in the S&P 500 since last year's low point. The rolling net flows into shares have only just turned positive. When you think that people have started talking about the US stock market in particular as a bubble, that's a remarkable stat. Investors remain scarred by the past and worried about the future, and they are far from exuberant yet. Looking at the very long term, a good argument can still be made that we're in a long, secular bull market. Previous big bull markets have started with the market about 50% below its trend and ended about 100% above it. This bull, beginning in 2009, started 47% below trend, but it's still only about 42% above it. That means the gains could continue for quite some time to come. That's an increasingly popular view on Wall Street, where strategists at Goldman Sachs and Credit Suisse both recently increased their 12-month targets for the S&P 500 on the back of those higher earnings estimates. On average, analysts are now looking for the main US benchmark to be close to 5,000 in a year's time. That's 11% higher than it stands today. The UK, of course, has been a notable laggard in recent years, thanks in part to Brexit and also to the greater impact of COVID on our services-based economy. That has fed through into continued outflows from funds invested in UK equities. In the first half of the year, these saw £2.2 billion worth of outflows, according to the Investment Association. And that was despite a £24 billion jump in overall net retail fund sales, as UK-based investors saw better opportunities elsewhere. retail investors have pulled £18 billion out of UK equity funds since 2016, and that's despite the valuation attractions of our domestic market.
Please be aware the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may not get back what you invest. This information does not constitute investment advice and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision, nor should it be treated as a recommendation for any investment. Investors should also note that the views expressed may longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Reference to specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Fidelity Personal Investing does not give personal recommendations. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to an authorised financial advisor. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. It is meant for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. Issued by Financial Administration Services Limited, authorised and regulated in the UK by the Financial Conduct Authority. Fidelity, Fidelity International, the Fidelity International logo and F symbol are trademarks of FIL Limited.